to another episode of Civil Conversations. I'm your host, Jason Searson. I have an awesome guest with us today. His name is Jerry Tipton, and he is a... What are you doing now for Strike, Jerry?
I'm a project manager here at Strike.
So Jerry's a project manager at Strack, and Strack has recently been recognized by ENR Magazine as the top specialty contractor in the Southeast, correct, Jerry?
Yeah, in Georgia, yes, sir.
In Georgia, awesome. That's a yep. huge accomplishment, and a lot to be proud of there. I'm sure that you guys are kind of basking in the glory, if you will, for a minute.
Yes, sir. I'm busy.
That's good. That's good. A little bit of history, kind of how Jerry and I got to know each other. I consider Jerry a dear friend of mine. I love this man right here, folks. He is, he's been an inspiration to me. He's mentored me a lot. Jerry's given me some shots in this business and some opportunities that, I probably wouldn't have been able to do if it wasn't for Jerry. So, Jerry was the best man of my wedding. So think a lot about, this man right here. He is a wealth of knowledge, super good at what he does. He's one of those kind of folks where good people attract good people, and, very excited to have him on the show. Jerry,
yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Jerry, tell us a little bit about, kind of, where you got started in the civil construction industry, kind of where you come from and how you wound up as a project manager with Strack.
Hey, I've been around it all my life. I mean, this is what my father and grandfather, and I mean, where I'm from, Robinsville, North Carolina, I mean, everybody pretty much growed up with a bulldozer in the front yard, but,
I know that to be true.
Back in the days, I mean, my dad, he, in the wintertime, I mean, it just basically shut down when it hit winter because it wasn't able to do anything. And, times got hard at times, but we fought through it and everything worked out the way it's supposed to be, I guess. I graduated high school in 1994, and my wife now then was girlfriend, ended up getting pregnant way to high school. So that changed things a lot. I remember going fishing with my dad to tell him that she was pregnant. And the first thing he said, well, you got to go to work, son. So as far right. as school and all that, that had to stop.
Well, did 1994. Jerry, when that happened, were you on another career path? Were you considering college at that time or no?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I wanted to go to the military, go in the Air Force. But I mean, I'll say, life happened for a reason, and it just wasn't meant to be, but I wouldn't change anything that's happened in my past. I mean, there's some things I would, but when it comes to my wife, my family, hey, I'm blessed. But
sure.
It's June of 94, I went to work full-time on the road. Lord, I've been in, I think, about 38 states since 1994 now working, and I've worked with some good companies and some really good companies, and I've worked some that wasn't so good, but first 5 to 8 years, I just chased that dollar. Somebody paid me more, I'd go to it. And eventually I got to the point where I wanted a career, not a job. And I actually went to work for a company called Morgan Corporation out of Spartanburg, South Carolina in 2000. And it basically made me realize, you know, it's more about the dollar, I guess. You can go a lot of different places and make more money. That don't make money, don't make happy, make you happy. But
that's right. I mean, I think we all hit that point in our career where you kind of look around and you know that extra money just ain't worth it. And I don't know what it is, but I know a lot of us wind up in that situation, Jerry, for sure.
Yeah, and you miss a lot with your family. I mean, you end up chasing that dollar, and the next thing you know, you're making all this big money, so you're going out buying new trucks, new boats, guns, four-wheelers, motorcycles, whatever you want to play with. And the next thing you know, you're in a situation where you have to make that kind of money in order to pay the bills.
Right.
So your choices mean a lot. But I mean, I've stayed on the road for over 26 years away from my family until now. And I started working Strack, and I actually moved my family, which I didn't think I'd ever move from Robbinsville, North Carolina. I mean, to me, that's God's country in the mountains. But I moved down here to South Georgia, and on south side of Atlanta, Noonan, Georgia, and brought my family down here last year, and with a great company, and everything going well right now. So, but I mean,
well, I know you and I have talked, ever since that we worked together at Phillips and Jordan up into this point, you and I have stayed in contact and stayed in touch with each other and been aware of what each other was doing. And I know now that, you're probably happier now than you ever been. Is that safe to say?
Yes, sir. By far. So
what, Jerry,
nice to come home every night.
Sure. Sure. And I'm very familiar with a lot of people in Robbinsville and, kind of how Robbinsville operates. There's people that say that, Robbinsville, North Carolina is the clearing capital of the world. And I know Jerry,
yeah, you've done, the truth, so.
Right. And you, I know you've done your fair share of clearing as well, but, you mainly focused on dirt, correct?
Yes, sir. I mean, in the beginning, I mean, I started out clearing, which I think everybody in Robbinsville did. I mean, I started out 272 Husqvarna chainsaw, and it's 12 hours a day and cutting power lines, and that'll make a man out of you real quick.
I guarantee
between
it.
Between that and pulling cable and on over skidder, you know?
Right. And if you're going to earn a living in Robbinsville doing that kind of work, I know where that place is. And if you drive an hour and a half to work every day and make it home, you're close to the house,
yeah.
And folks just from that part of the country, they just, most people that do this kind of work, they travel.
Yeah.
They travel. And
back in the day, it was hard. I got taught by the older generation that's almost gone now. And I was really blessed in life to be able to come up when I did, I guess, be getting taught by these older guys. And I mean, it was no bullshit. I mean, they're going to speak their mind. And if you messed up, they're going to let you know about it, you know? But they was there to help you too. If they seen that you was willing to learn and you listen, they'd do everything in the world for you to help you. And it just, we've come a long way from that generation nowadays.
Absolutely. And it's that particular conversation is kind of a double-edged sword for me, because I come up in the old school manner as well. And, where it didn't matter if you operate or labor, it didn't matter what you did. If something needed to be done, you just jumped in there and did it.
Exactly.
There's so much of that. It feels like it's been lost, and we're headed in a different direction now, but take it for what it's worth. You know, these old guys have a lot to offer in the realm of knowledge, and we should be listening to them.
Exactly. And they're not going to give you much, so, but if you'll listen, they'll tell you. So,
absolutely.
Us
as an industry, we're terrible teachers, yeah. Jerry.
Yep.
You know,
that's something we've got to get better as. And as time changes, I mean, we've had to change the way that we do that. Especially myself. I mean, I was brought up and I was taught the old school way and the screaming, and I'm real honest. And today I'm still real honest and probably too honest, I guess, if that's a polite way to put it. But I've had to change the way I do things as well in the last 7 or 8 years as far as approaching people and running jobs. And it's a different world. And this industry has got tough because of it. There's good money to be made in this industry and what we do, but people want to come out of the school and they want top dollar first day on the job. They don't want to have to work for what we've had to do in order to get where we're at today. I mean, it's took me years to get the position I'm in now, and been around a lot of good people and a lot of smart people to get me where I'm at today. But I mean, it's took me almost 30 years to get the money I make now and the position I'm in. But the younger generation nowadays, they don't have to work for it to be able to get to where we're at.
And Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong here. You know, you probably, if you wouldn't have went down the path that you did, you know, from pretty much starting on the ground at an entry level job to the point that you are now, is it safe to say you wouldn't have the knowledge, you wouldn't have the experience, and you wouldn't have the know-how to do what you do now if it wouldn't have been for that experience?
I worked for Robbinville Contracting back in the mid-90s, and Harold Orr was the president of the company, and I worked for him for years. And he come up to me one day. We actually went with Roanoke, Virginia, on a landfill, and was working for another superintendent on that job. We'd always go on Wednesday nights and eat crab legs. Harold Orr used to drive his big van, his big luxury van he always wanted, and when he backed up, he'd never look at his right mirror. So hell, we backed into things every time we got in it. People's cars, and he just, well, shit. So, and just drive off. You're not going to stop down the way. Ah, son, we didn't do nothing to it. I'm like, man. But anyhow, he come to me and says, Tipton, he says, I'm going to make you a superintendent. He said, do you think you can run this job? I said, well, yes, sir. Go help, I can. So 2 years later, he had me doing everything in the world. I thought he was mad at me. I mean, I thought he was just trying to get me to quit. I mean, he had me doing stuff that just, it was awful. And I'd get mad and say, Harold, what are you doing? I mean, you trying to get me to quit? I mean, what's going on here? He said, listen, son, he said, you can't tell somebody else what to do if you can't do it yourself.
That's
he had me doing everything in the world, from clearing to landfill to building paths to roads, you name it, and some of the nicest shit you've ever seen in your life. I am blessed that he done that for me, because I would not ask anybody to do something that I can't do myself.
Sure. And how old were you when you wound up with this opportunity, or the baptism by fire, or whatever you want to call it?
Oh, I was 19. And
wow.
That's when he started. And when I was 21 year old, he made me superintendent and sent me to Shreveport, Louisiana, down at Barksdale Air Force Base. And we had a big demolition job going down there in front of all the colonels and the general's house and all that stuff. And I'd never been away from home that far. He sent me down there by myself. Said, nope, you can't hire nobody. You can't take nobody. We're going to hire local people down there. We can't afford nothing. So I get down here in Shreveport, Louisiana, about 13 hours from my house by myself on an Air Force base. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? So I get out there and go to work. And the first thing I know, all these sirens start going off. And I see soldiers running everywhere. So, hell, I go freaking out thinking we're getting bombed here, because we're on a bombing base. And I'm about ready to just hit the road wide open. And the little MP, little inspector we had out there, I said, man, what the hell is going on here? He said, oh, it's just a training exercise. I said, buddy, I was fixing to leave the scene now. So,
I've never heard you talk about this.
Yeah, that was my first job as a superintendent ever, and I wasn't down there 3 days, and they done this, and I thought that was the end of the world. It was it. So I was going to die in Shreveport, Louisiana.
So 21 years old, you're superintendent, you've never been away from the house. And
no, nothing, no more than a couple of hours, you know? I mean, it's just, well, Roanoke is about 4 hours. I mean, that's where it's been. And,
right.
But, I mean, we spent about 3 months down there and finished that job, and never went home until the job was finished. My wife come down and see me about after a month and a half, and that was the start of it. And it's grown from there. I mean, it's just, we've done a lot of work, a lot of work that I hope I don't ever get back on again, but I learned from it, and every job is different. And my old man always told me, you know, if you get to the point where you think you know it all, then it's time for you to find something else in life to do, because you ain't worth a shit at what you're doing. So,
well, I want to go back. I mean, I'm picturing myself being on a job as a superintendent, never been away from the house, and you are the man for that company. How did yes. it go? Like, to the hiring process? There's a 21 year old kid here trying to hire people. How did that? I mean, how did you do with that?
if they come in and apply for a job, I hired them. But I didn't know no different.
Right.
And when it boiled down to it, a lot of the work I ended up doing by myself, because hell, nobody else could do it other than hiring.
Right.
But I mean, it's a learning curve, and eventually they did send me two more operators down from Robbinsville, which helped out tremendously. But I mean, it just, like I say, I had never hired a person or fired a person in my life. And within the first week, I done fired two. Didn't know if I was doing the right thing or not, but they made me mad. So,
right.
The way that went. But yeah. It's not that easy anymore.
Right. Absolutely. No. In today's climate, you almost got to be a lawyer and a therapist and an engineer and all the above
to be more of a therapist than you are anything. I mean, people talk about kids. And, I mean, you get on a group of guys that's got 50 men on a job, I promise you, 50 kids is probably a catwalk compared to 50 grown men. Which my wife will probably tell you she agrees with that 100%. But it's just unbelievable some of the stuff you got to deal with. But to be a good leader, you need to be a good listener. I've learned that through the years. If you listen to your guys, everybody has problems. We all do. You don't know what happens when a man leaves the job and he goes home. When he comes back the next morning, you don't know what happened. He may come in the next morning and be in a safety meeting. He just ill as hell, ready to kill everybody. And, don't jump to conclusions. I mean, take time to go up to somebody and say, hey, man, you all right? And sometimes that's all it takes. And if they open up to you, great. If they don't, then, hey, you've done your part of it too. But just always remember, you don't know what goes on in somebody else's house. Or once they leave your job, you don't know what's happening.
Absolutely.
Just gotta get everybody against the other doubt.
I was talking
about.
It's
taken me a while to figure that out too. Now, I mean, I've just back in my younger days, I was a fireball, and I probably should have had my ass whipped more than once. But it's just you learn from it. So the more you do this, and
I know you. I don't think you and I were talking about it there the other day, but I did a video there the other day. The biggest asset that we have is our people. And I think at times,
by far.
Yeah. And I mean, because the truth of the matter is anybody can go out here and if they got good credit, and you got a little cash, you can buy machines.
But I don't pay for a machine if you ain't got nobody to run them. So.
That's exactly right. With that being said,
I mean, I look at a job like a football team. A football team, you got one person ain't going to win the game.
That's right.
And on a job site, one person ain't going to do the job, whether it's the superintendent or a project manager or, hell, the owner of the company. One person ain't going to do that job. And, I've learned that you treat everybody equal. I don't care what race you are, girl, woman, or boy. It don't make no difference. If you treat the guy running that shovel over there, been on job 2 days, the same way that you treat that Finnish guy over on that bulldog, been doing it for 30 years, it goes a long way.
Absolutely.
I've never shown favoritism, and I'm not going to. It just – because I had to start out from the ground, so I know what it's like to start out as a nobody. But, I mean, it just – nowadays it's hard to get the younger generation to understand it's okay if you don't know it, Nobody wants to ask the questions. Nobody wants to take the time to learn how to do stuff the right way or listen to the guy that's over our – running the dozer for 30 years. It's called hell. He talks mean to me, or he cusses at me when he talks to me. But I mean, just a lot of butt hurt going on nowadays. It's that you have to deal with on a daily basis. But I mean, it just, maybe 2 out of 10 people you hire nowadays come in and, they might make, I mean, you hire 10 people nowadays, 10 people are going to be here in 6 months.
Yeah, that's a safe assumption for sure. Yep.
But you get out in the cold and the heat and the dirt, and it's a hard life. It's a good life if you enjoy it, but life's, if you don't enjoy what you do, then you need to find something else in life to do, whether it's this or working at a factory or hell, working at a grocery store, buying groceries.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But we're getting there. I mean, it's a battle. Not just us, but I mean, everybody that's in this business is dealing with it right now. And there's some good people comes with us. I mean, don't take me wrong now. There's some really good people and some good friends I made through the years, and some enemies too. But I mean, that's just part of it. But in this line of work, when you make good friends, they're friends for life. I mean, I've got guys that I've worked with 20 years ago that I can still call right now, and hell, we'll sit down and laugh about the job we worked on, you know?
I haven't seen you in a while, but it seemed like you and I are talking at least once a week, once every 2 weeks at the most, you know?
Exactly.
And one of these days I'm going to get my numbers where they're supposed to be, and I might be able to knock a tree down for you. Maybe that would be even better.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jerry, I know you've experienced, you know, working with some smaller companies, you know, and then on up into some very large companies. In your opinion, what makes a good company, a solid company that people want to come and work for?
Leadership. It's got to start from the top. If you've got good people at the top of any company that shows that they care for their employees, then it just makes everything better. When you got to work for somebody and you feel like you're just a number, then in reality that you're a number. I mean, all of us can be replaced, whether it's me or you or anybody. I mean, everybody's replaceable.
Sure.
But if you go to work and you're worried about whether or not you're going to have a job tomorrow, then you're probably at the wrong place.
I couldn't agree with that statement more.
I mean, thankfully, I'm working for a company right now that it just, they're awesome. I mean, Strack is probably one of the best companies I've ever worked for. I mean, our owners are just awesome people. They care about their employees. I mean, it's the family here. I mean, they call it Strack Nation here, and I promise you, our Strack Nation, it's here. But I mean, it comes from Jonathan and Joe truly caring about their employees and their well-being to their families, and they truly understand without the guys in the field, they're not who they are, you know?
Right.
But I mean, it just, a lot of people lose that, and they start getting a lot of money coming in, whether it's the owner or the president or vice president. They just, they forget where they come from. I mean, we've all started from somewhere, and a lot of people lose that down the road. They forget where they come from and just how hard it is to work 12-14 hours a day, daylight to dark, and 20 degrees outside or 110 degrees outside, and
it's tough. And I just want to interject right here and bring a point across. The whole time that Jerry and I have been talking up to this point, and it's something that I want to point out, and something that I am very, very adamant about and passionate about. And the most important thing that you've heard so far, you haven't heard Jerry and I really talk about equipment. You haven't really heard Jerry and I talk about pay and compensation and all of these things. The main thing that you've heard up to this point has been people. That's the key in every successful civil construction company's arsenal is people. You gotta have the right people. And it starts just like Jerry said, it starts with the leadership. It meanders down through the either division managers or your project managers and, you know, superintendents to your foreman. I just want to make sure that we reiterate that success starts with at the top, and it's, and it revolves around people. That's
well, there has to be a culture, and I mean, a culture has to start from the top.
Sure.
I mean, it's anything. I mean, just like a safety. I mean, everybody preaches safety. We're the best in safety, but in any company, if there's not a safety culture, then it's not going to work. You can't have half your employees doing what you're supposed to do and the other half saying, well, hell, I don't care. Here comes safety man. Let's put our hard hat on real quick. And then as soon as he leaves, take his hard hat off or whatever. Because, I mean, what it takes is, you know, whether it's on your job or not, somebody gets hurt within the company, it's the whole, the company pays for it. It ain't just that job. And nowadays, the way it is, there's a lot of work you can't even, you, they won't even let you, you can get your foot in the door with them to even price the work if your safety record's not where it's supposed to be. So, I mean, you know, I started out with just old D6C models and D models. I spent many a days on a D6D re-raking, and I'd come out and all you could see is teeth and eyes because I'd be just black and suck from re-raking piles and, you know, and restacking piles. And remember the first time Harold or when Rob Bill told me I need to take that D6 through that burning pile out there, I said, you're crazier than hell. And he said, he let me off here. So he bails through there and he just disappeared in this big red ball. And I thought, he's dead. I mean, there's no way he'd right. come through with that. And here he come back out of it. And I mean, it's just, you can have old equipment and still get the job done if you have the right people on that piece of equipment. You don't have, nowadays, I mean, some of the biggest stuff I hear is, oh, this is a piece of shit. This excavator ain't good enough. Or there's too much slack in it. This dozer ain't good enough. I can't do that. You know? Now, you may not be able to do it, but there's people that can. So.
Right. Right. And, you know, I know some things about your company, kind of how you guys are structured and some of the folks that work for your work for your company. And I will tell you this, when it comes to safety, I am familiar with your safety department. I mean, I know JW, I know, David Haney. I believe, your brother Vondale, is he involved with safety now, Jerry?
Yes, he's safety equipment and stuff like that. And but yeah, we do. We have a really great safety department here, and we've come a long way. And I mean, Strack, from the time I started here 4 years ago, and I'd worked with him as a sub 4 years prior to that for another company before I come to work for Strack. And I mean, it just, they've always been great. And I mean, our EMR is right where it needs to be. I mean, we can go anywhere we want to and work right now. Our safety director is awesome. We've got some really good group of guys. And again, it started from the top to build the culture we have now. So.
Right, right. And I know, you know, I worked with that, the pleasure of working with David Haney and Vondale too, when we were at Phillips and Jordan. And when you know, talking about people and how they kind of operate as a football team, of course, David Haney was in Robbinsville, is not known as David Haney. He's known as Coach Haney. And I remember being on it.
He was my school teacher in the fifth grade. So he was my science teacher in fifth grade. So I actually a tic-tac-toe champion in his class. My mother still has a certificate where I was a tic-tac-toe champion in his class.
You can tell what's going on in Robbinsville.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you need to know how to crank a chainsaw, and you need to know how to play tic-tac-toe, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. I can beat that ice and tic-tac-toe, just FYI. So,
but I'll tell you.
David Haney's one of the best men I've ever been around, and he's a godly man, and it shows. And he is just – David Haney is an awesome dude. And I'll do anything in the world for that man.
I got to share this story about David, just kind of how he operated, you know, before Jerry gave me an opportunity to bump up to an estimator when I was working at Phillips and Jordan. I worked as a foreman, and David was a very fair man, and he would kind of give you a heads up, and he'd let you know that he was coming to the site, you know. And so I'd, you know, run around, make sure kind of have my ducks in an order, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And David would show up and he would do an audit on the site and, you know, and he'd get done and he'd come up there and I'd say, well, how'd I do, you know? And he would show me his audit and there would be something on it, you know, and he would just kind of look at me and, you know, he wouldn't really say anything. He wouldn't like be in my ass about anything. He'd just kind of show me the paper, you know, and kind of tilt his head a little bit, you know, and he'd look at me like David Haney does. And he'd say, Jason, I'm kind of disappointed in you. And when that, I would rather somebody kick me in the damn teeth than to hear those words come out of that man's mouth. I thought so much of him, you know. Yes. David didn't have to, that guy don't have to, you know, he's not a safety cop. He's not a typical safety person that I know, as a typical safety person.
Well, my whole belief is safety is supposed to be there to help you and not hurt you.
Right.
And some of the problems that I've had on jobs that I've done through in the past is, you know, the safety man think he's the cop, you know, do what he says or go home. And nobody, you got to have somebody on a job site where if you see something going on that you feel unsafe, that you need to be able to talk to. In my opinion, that's the safety man.
Right.
And any safety man builds that wall in front of him where nobody feels comfortable talking to him or telling him anything that's going on, or if they feel unsafe, then he's failing at his job.
Right.
I mean, it's just David is one of those people where I call David right now and talk to him about anything, whether it's about what's going on at home, personal to work, and he will talk with you. David will sit down, he'll pray with you, and I mean, it's just he's an awesome guy, and just God bless me and you both from even knowing him.
Absolutely.
I've known him for many years.
Absolutely. But I mean, that just goes to show you what caliber of people that are at the Strike organization. Jerry, I know that Strike moves dirt, of course, but I know that you guys also do some specialty stuff as well, that gets out of your typical dirt movement.
Yes, we do a lot of utility. We do anything utility wise, from sewer, water, storm. We do underground boring. I mean, we've got bore machine. We can do up 72 inch through solid rock. And those guys are awesome. I mean, it's just, we work all around Atlanta here in downtown Atlanta. I mean, besides sky rise buildings. And I mean, it's just, the clearing aspect of it, we pretty much sub out. Back in the day, Strack done all the clearing. They had logger trucks. I mean, you name it. Had horizontal grinder, tub grinders. I mean, they full bore. And 2008 come, and of course, just like everybody else, they lost a lot during those 3 years, from 2008, 2011. And I think they actually went down from like 450 people in 2008 down to 45.
Wow.
But I mean, and now here we are, we're up to 420 some people now. We own over 300 pieces of heavy equipment and we're growing every week. I mean, it's just, we've been blessed. We got some really good guys that's come on board and brought a lot of information and knowledge, and it's just, everything's going really well right now. And it's just, we've really been blessed. And in the last 2 years, we basically doubled in size, and it's just, but it, again, it started from the top. I mean, Jonathan and Joe, they had a vision of what they wanted Strack to be, and here we are, and it's going really, really well. So.
Jerry, you know, I know the boring work that you guys do is not very typical, just because of the size of the bore that you guys can do. How specialized is that type of work?
They probably ain't maybe three or four companies in the whole Southeast that even does the work.
Wow.
I mean, it's, and Strack's been doing it for many years. So, I mean, the guys that we've got on our boring crews have been here for, you know, 15, 30 years. I mean, it's just they're just awesome guys. They know what they're doing. They know the safe way to do things, no matter whether it's going across underneath 285 up here in Atlanta or Interstate 75 or working 10 feet off of a 1,000-foot building, you know.
Wow.
But, I mean, it just
I would imagine. I'd imagine that's a different breed of person right there that really wants to wake up in the morning and get 20 feet underground and spend their whole day literally in a trench box.
Yes. I mean, it's just, you know, some of our pits 30 foot deep. I mean, you know, they're down in working in, and we've done a lot of work this year underneath 285, 400, and all around Atlanta. And I mean, it just, there's no room for error, you know?
Sure.
They've done an awesome job. We've got some of the best pipe people, superintendent, general superintendents, operator, you name it, that I've ever worked with in my life. And I worked for Morgan Corporation for about 10 years altogether. And they've got some real good people too. Now, don't take me wrong, Morgan's a great company. It's a family-owned business there as well. David Johnson, he's the CEO of one of the sons. He's basically my age. We started out at Stonecrest Mall up here, and he's running the company. And they've got some really good people, too. But by far, I guess some of the pipe people here is probably the best I've ever been around. They do awesome work.
Well, there's a lot to be said for that, because I know you've been around the block. You've seen your fair share of utility crews out there. Jerry, what separates those crews from your average crew? Is it the quality of the work? Is it the quality of the people? I mean, a little bit of both. What is it?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I'd say it's like family. I mean, your crew is like family. You spend more time with people you work with than you do your family most of the time. I mean, in reality, with what we do, we're spending more time with the guys that we're working with than we do our own family. So
that's a very accurate statement. I know that up until probably how long have you been at Strack now, Jerry?
January will be 4 years I've been here.
So. You've been there for 4 years, and up to pretty much this point, you've primarily been on the road for your whole life.
Yes, I am. So, I mean, say I graduated high school when I was 18 years old, and I've been on the road ever since until now. And I do a lot of driving. I mean, we've got a lot of work all over Georgia and Alabama and South Carolina, and we're licensed and 8 states here in the Southeast, and we've got a lot of work we're looking at right now scattered all in the Southeast. But 90% of the time, I come home every night, and it's just, I'm blessed to be able to do that right now, and I hope it continues. But I know eventually, you know, we got to get further out with workload that we've got and equipment and people. The more you grow, the more work it takes to feed it, you know?
Sure.
I mean, I've been on the road and I've missed a lot so through the years. But
well, now in this last 4 years, because I know that how travel can be on a relationship, especially in marriage. You know, when my wife and I first got together, I was not on the road, and I hung around Millen, Georgia, and I made some chicken shit money for a while, and I pretty much told her, I said, I'm kind of tired of getting by, you know, I'm ready to make some money again. And she didn't really know what I was talking about. And then from that point up until I started this business, I was primarily on the road all the time. And how did, you know, when you kind of come off the road and you started seeing more home time, did your relationship with your wife and kids, did you see that change any?
No, I've got an awesome wife. I mean, we was high school sweethearts growing up, and I mean, it just, far being perfect, no, it's not been perfect, but the only thing is keeping me and my wife together. I mean, it's the good Lord. I mean, you know, if you ain't got God in your house, then it ain't gonna last. I don't care who you are and Absolutely. What you say, but I mean, we went through some stuff through the years, and majority of it's been my shit. I'll admit to it, but I mean, my wife is, she's the backbone. I mean, hell, she's my rock now, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for her. And I'll tell anybody that, and I'll tell her that to her face, and I have many times, but it just, she basically raised my first two kids basically by herself. I mean, I come home weekend a month, and I mean, my daughter's 25, my oldest daughter's 25, and my son's 19, which he's going to Kennesaw State right now, construction engineering. And we adopted two little beautiful little girls last year. And well, one of them's 7 now, and Tegan fixing to turn 6 in January.
And that's awesome.
Just, I made my mind up when we had adopted these two little girls that I wasn't going to do this no more. It wasn't right for my wife to have to raise these kids like she did my kid by herself. And we packed up and we moved. I figured out Strat was where I wanted to be, and I hope I'm here to retire. And I bought a house down here and brought them with me, and it's been really good. It really has. It just, I like coming home, and first thing you see, your kid want to give you a hug and see my wife, you know.
That's all. Awesome.
26 years without having and not been able to do that. And it's just, it's a great feeling to be able to come home during the night.
If I would have the opportunity to talk to her right now, would she say that there's times that she aggravates or that you aggravate the shit out of her now because you are home every day?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, no doubt about it.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I ain't no doubt about that. But, but I mean, you know, it's really good. Like I say, we've been married 23 years now. We've been married 24 years in June. And then we've been together for, God, 27, 28 years.
Wow. So,
I mean, over half of my life, I'll be 45 in a couple of weeks. And over half of my life, I've been with her. And I wouldn't change nothing about it. It's just, if you got a good woman at home and able to put up with the crap that we have to do and the crap that men does, then she's a keeper for sure.
Well, you know, it's.
But by far, there's no way I'd be where I'm at today without my wife and her having my back, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. And the same goes here, you know, anything from, you know, the crazy shit happening at the house when you can't be there, you know, when the basement's flooding and this light won't come on out here or whatever it is. And it takes, you know, it takes, not just a good spouse, but at times, you know, some good neighbors and good family around at times.
Be like, yes.
You know,
yes.
Where you pick up the phone and say, can you run over there and check on her and see what we can. And I mean, those things are invaluable. And, you know, a lot of people, when you travel on the road, there's so many things that happen, everything from, you know, I get, we, you know, Amy and I try to communicate at times, and she's, you know, I mean, just, she's like, I'm getting Zachary socks for baseball. What kind does he need? You know? And I'm like, well, shit, if I was sitting there at Academy Sports, I could just reach off the shelf and say, this is what he needs.
Yep.
You know, and, or the type of spikes. I remember one time her sitting there holding up a football spike and the kid's playing baseball. You know, like, is this what I need? I'm like, no, you gotta get him some baseball shoes, you know? So that's a whole nother dynamic when it comes with the traveling aspect of what we do. And it's tough.
Yeah, it's very tough. I mean, it's just been a lot of wrestling matches and ball games that gets missed. It's, you know, but we're all trying to provide for our family. I mean, all. I didn't grow up much, and my mom and daddy, I mean, they just, they done all they could. My mom got sick when I was young, real young, and my dad ended up doing a lot of work for cash because he just, if he made a certain amount of money, then mama could get her medicine paid for, you know?
Right.
But it just.
But those are the kind of things that.
But we try to give our kids what we didn't have, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And sometimes we probably give our kids too much nowadays because they expect it all the time. But thankfully, my kid ain't like that. And thank God they know how to work. And it just, I don't know. It's times now a lot different than it was 40 years ago and 30 years ago when we growed up. And just, it don't seem like people has to work as hard as we did to be able to have anything, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I sure understand that. You know, I was talking to Gabe Worley and Tyler Pearson there the other day. And a matter of fact, we've been fortunate enough here in the last couple of weeks to actually do some work together. They were able to help us out on a project near Nashville. And we were kind of talking about, you know, when we were all at Phillips and Jordan, kind of what we had when we were there. And I think you can attest to this. We had some phenomenal people in your division at the time.
Oh, and, Lord, no doubt.
And you know, I'm looking at it now. I'm looking at it now. You know, I see where you are. Tyler actually, you know, started a business. He's got two businesses now, and he's helping Gabe. Gabe is now the vice president of a company. You know, I own a business.
Y'all are doing great, man. I'm proud of all of you. And to see where you started out from, to see where you are at now. I mean, all three of you. It makes me feel good. Maybe I got to show you a little bit of something anyhow. But
well, hell yeah.
It just, y'all are doing great, and it just, hey, I wish everybody the best of luck. And it just,
absolutely,
just keep doing what y'all are doing, and we'll be fine. I promise you. I mean, it just, you've got a great head on your shoulder. You know the work. You know what you got to do, and y'all are doing it. And it's just, it's really, really good. And hell, I say, I'm proud of all three damn of you.
Well, I appreciate that, Jerry. But what I was getting at, you know, is we were talking to Jim Reddy there the other day, you know, and Jim was super excited that we were able to do a project together again, you know, and he was like, I want you guys, he was talking to Gabe and Tyler, and he said, I want you guys to put together what you guys had at Phillips and Jordan. And Gabe told him, and Tyler, they both were like, you'll never see that again.
You know, yeah.
That's a one in a lifetime shot, you know, and you'll never see that again. And it's true. You know, we've all gone our separate ways, you know, and we've made, you know, put ourselves in great positions, but that core group of people right there at that particular time and moment in time, that'll never happen again.
No, you know? There'll be other situations to happen. I mean, and that's a good thing about the work that we do. I mean, you know, you get into certain job, certain time of your life, it's, you'll remember for the rest of your life, you know. Everybody goes their separate ways eventually, but you'll always have good memories anyhow.
Absolutely. Jerry, when you're trying to hire somebody, kind of changing the subject a little bit, but when you're considering hiring somebody for any position, let's say equipment operator, you know, what kind of qualities are you looking for in a person?
Honesty is the biggest thing. Don't come to me and say, you can do something when you can't. If you come to me and say, listen, I can run a bulldozer enough pushing Paul down over there, but I ain't a finished man. Or I can run that excavator over there, but I can't load a truck in 45 seconds. I'm willing to work with you. But if you come up to me and say, oh, I'm a finished man, and I take you out there and, hell, you can't crank the bulldozer, then we're off on the wrong foot from the beginning. To me, if you're honest to me up front, then anybody's willing to work with anybody. Most people is anyhow. But I mean, you just look at people's character. Character has a lot to do with it. Attitude. But I mean, I'd say biggest thing, be honest, people. If you don't know how to do something, say it, you know. I mean, not only for you, but I mean, don't get yourself. I mean, you say you can do something, somebody's gonna put you over in a situation to where if you can't do it, then you're gonna get hurt, you're gonna hurt somebody or worse. And because nobody knows.
Sure.
And nowadays, back when we growed up, I mean, you go apply for a job, they'd get you on a bulldozer, an excavator, a haul truck, or roller, or whatever, and you'd have to show them you could do that before they'd even hire you, you know?
Right.
And the way things are nowadays, you can't do that. I mean, you hire them, and then you hope and pray when they get on the job, hell, they are what they say they are. And it just
How many throughout your career, you know, and you're advancing through your career, how many times did a good looking resume get you a job?
Oh, none.
So
it just
first
time I had a resume, I worked with Morgan Corporation. They built me a resume one time when we started Plant Vogel. In 2008, I guess that's the first resume I ever seen. And hell, I didn't have nothing to do with it. Company built it for me.
Because they had to show qualified personnel on the project, correct?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is your advancement through the years to the point to where you are now has been primarily because of your reputation.
Yes. I started out really, really young as a supervisor, and that was hard. I mean, you got a 21-year-old out there telling a man that's 60-year-old that's been running that piece of equipment for 35 years what to do, and that's been tough. And I've had to prove myself many, many times to show people, hey, you know, I'm willing to learn. You know, show me a better way to do things. I'm all ears. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I remember telling many guys that, you know, this is the way I want to do it. You want to do it this way. Let's try it your way. If it works and you can get it done as fast as I want it done, then we'll do it your way. But if not, then you're going to try it my way, you know. But, I mean, it just you got to give respect to get respect. And I learned that many years ago, and it's worked out great for me. And it just say nobody knows everything. And there's a better way to do stuff, and you can get it done quicker, and it's safe, and I mean, be willing to change, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. Good, solid points, Jerry. You know, I guess ultimately what I'm trying to get at is you just said that your resume, a good looking resume never got you the next job. Folks listening, you know, the seasoned guys that are listening, you already know that the guys that don't know yet, your reputation and your integrity in this business can take you all the way to the top if you're a solid person. And it don't have nothing to do with a resume.
No. I put a lot of stuff on a piece of paper, whether I can do it or not. And anybody else can. But, I mean, it just, you've got to be able to back up what you're saying you can do. So, and if you can't, you may get away with it for a while, but eventually it's going to catch up to you. And, you know, word gets around, and the business that we're in, everybody knows each other. And, you know,
oh,
if I leave Strack today and go to work somewhere else, I can promise you wherever I'm calling, know somebody working here at Strack is going to call and say, hey, what's this tipping guy about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's just the way it works, and it just got a lot of job. I mean, it's competitive work, and there ain't too many people do what we do.
No,
a lot of people knows a lot of people.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, as you're progressing through your career, you know, integrity probably means more than anything does. Because I know Jerry, I know you're big on integrity, you're big on honesty, and I know that you are very loyal to folks that are honest and loyal to you, and I know that firsthand. Yes. And I can honestly say, you know, through personal experience, that I wouldn't be where I'm at in my career if it wouldn't have been for that. And Jerry knows that the man that kind of helped us get in business and got us to where we are now, that man is, in my mind, one of the poster childs for integrity and honesty. And
no doubt about that.
So. Good Christian man. And with that being said, you know, he would have never helped us if he didn't see these kind of qualities in us.
Yes.
And, it's nice knowing that we work in a network of people that look out for each other, that respect each other, that and you know, if Jerry tells me something, I don't care what it is, I can take it to the bank. You know, no contract needed. I don't need an email. Jerry said it. That's good with me. You know, yep. And it's nice doing business with folks that operate like that, for sure.
Yes, it is.
Well, I will tell you this: the Bulldogs play the Tennessee Volunteers this weekend.
Yeah, that's why we're having this conversation now, because after Tennessee whoops up on them dogs this Saturday, then Jason's not going to talk to me for a couple weeks. But
that's not true, because we're gonna win, and I'm definitely going to be wanting to talk to you. You probably won't want to talk to me, but I'm going to talk to you.
If Tennessee loses and I'm deactivating Facebook, social media, I'm changing my phone number. I've got a bet with my neighbor down here. He's a big Georgia fan too. He ain't too smart, but but we've got a bet. Georgia wins, then I've got to put a Georgia flag on front of my house for a week. But and vice versa, Tennessee wins, I get to put a Tennessee flag on his house. So, so if Tennessee end up losing this weekend, I'm not getting out of the house for next week, but I don't want to pull up in my driveway and see that ugly ass flag hanging on my house. So.
Well, you know, the most important thing that, you know, God forbid that happen. But if it does, just remember this. Jeremy Pruitt come from Georgia. Don't forget that.
I don't care where he come from. I care where he is now. He can be the Pope yourself, but I don't care. But we do, for one. I mean, I hope – I've got my fingers crossed, trust me, but I think we may have a little bit to go before we can get to the point where we can compete with Jordan. Oh, God, Bama. I might throw up a little bit to say Bama, but
that's going to be rough.
But no, I love college football, and I'm just glad they're playing. And,
absolutely. Jerry, what's the funniest thing you've ever seen on a job site?
Oh, God, there probably too many of them to even touch. Lord, I don't know. Lord, I don't know, son. There've been so many times where just it's every day you'll see something. Man, it's just
work is fun, isn't
people
it?
People we work with, oh, it is. I mean, it really is, and you know, and it's just yeah. Some of it gets crazy, and some of it's safety man. If they've seen it, they'd probably run every one of us off. But I mean, it just you've got to have a good time. I mean, to do what we do and the stress that everybody does this business has, I mean, like I say, you work daylight to dark 6-7 days a week. It gets stressful, and you got to have fun on a job.
Absolutely. I mean,
I've got a lot of good memories through the years, and it just God, I don't know if I could pick one.
Well, I want to share one with you that
I've got one. It probably ain't gonna be been saying, but
right.
We used to have. I worked at Robinville Contracting. We're doing a highway job in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and we had the supervisor on the job, and I'm not gonna say his name or not like that, but he was hated. I mean, that was the grouchiest person I've ever met around in my life, and his work truck tore up, and the mechanic we had on site, he said, "We'll fix him." He run the wire to the spring in his old seat, so from the battery. So he gets in lunch, and we all sitting up pretty waiting on him to get in his truck. And he finally gets in his truck, and his old hat, cockeyed, and glasses crooked, and this cousin raising cane. He gets in the truck, and he turns the switch on, and it just lights his ass up. And he squeals, and we're all back there just about to die. and he's trying to figure out what's going on. So he hits the switch again. It hits him again. And he finally just jumped out of the truck and he hollered at a mechanic and Don, he, what's going on? And he said, man, every time I turn the switch on, something light me up. And to this day, he still don't know whatever happened to him. unless somebody's told him, I don't know. But they wasn't none of us going to tell him what's going on because he would have fired the whole crew. But it just, I'll never forget that. And that's been, Lord, it's been 22 years ago, I guess now. But that's yeah, awesome. That's, yeah.
Jerry, if you could pick out, you know, our work in nature, and I know the industry's getting better and better all the time in regards to safety, but you know, there are some dangerous aspects to what we do. What's the most dangerous or the scariest thing that you've ever seen on a project?
The scariest I've ever been is I was stacking, I was running an excavator. I was in Franklin, Virginia, and worked Philip and Jordan at the time. And we were doing a swamp job. And it was about 9 miles through the swamp. And we were having to go through it. And the last 6 miles, I had water running through my floorboard of my excavator all day long. Everything we had within that 100-foot right away was stacking, putting up underneath us is, to build a road to set on. And I'd still have water running through the floorboard of my excavator all day. And after we'd get through, we'd have to stack this stuff up. And we get to the end of the line. And with a stacking, and I had a six pushing stuff to me. And we were sitting there stacking a pile, burning it. I mean, you're just reaching around, and the dozer's pushing debris to you. You're grabbing it, you're shaking it out, you're putting it on a pile, getting ready for burn. I spun around, and the boy back behind me, and you're warning on the excavator, is before we had radios, you stick your bucket up in there, you know? And that told everybody you need to stop. But I spun around, and his pile to him, he had one tree was stuck out. That he was, the ball of the root was stuck in the dozer, and he just pushed that troll. And when I spun around, it was coming in between my tracks. And I didn't even have time to get my boom up. I jumped out, and it come up through the bottom glass, through the computer screen, and through my seat before the dozer even knew anything was happening. By then, I done jumped off the excavator and run, and he finally seen me running when he stopped. But by then, it done went plumb through the back seat. So, and to me, that was probably the closest that I'd ever come. Because if I'd been in the seat, I mean, there's no doubt about it, it would have killed me. And I guess that's probably the scariest I've ever been. And I've seen a lot of stuff happen, equipment turnovers, stuff like that through years. But as far as personal things that's happened to me, that's probably the scariest, and it's just a blink of an eye. I mean, by far, you know, utility construction, being down in a ditch, stuff like that, can't explain to you how dangerous it is, moving dirt. But when it comes to clearing, that's the most dangerous part of what we do. I mean, everything you're doing is in a bind. You're pushing these trees. I mean, you're knocking trees down. You don't know what's in the top of that tree. I mean, it's just clearing by far, and what we've done in this industry is probably the dangerous, most dangerous thing that we do.
It is for sure. Well, Jerry, it's been a pleasure having you on our show.
It's been a blessing. So.
Real quick, is Strack hiring?
Oh, we're always hiring.
Okay,
looking for a great company, you're looking for a family atmosphere. You're looking for a company that's going to be here for years to come. I mean, Strack, you get on our website. It's Strack Inc. It's STRACKINC.com. And you can see everything about us, how we got started. I mean, Strack's been in business since 1948. It's in the third generation now with Jonathan. Jonathan, 40-year-old. I mean, he's a great mind. He knows the business. He's worked from the ground up, so he knows how to do the work. He's not one that just looks at a piece of paper, and he can come out on the job and do just the same thing you're doing. And I think it goes a long way because he understands just how hard it is to be out on the job and to make things happen the way it needs to happen. But if you're looking for something to do and a great company to work for, Strac, I'm telling you, it's an awesome place to be. So,
Jerry, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Can't wait to see you. I'm sure I'll see you here before long.
Yes, sir. I'll be talking to you probably Saturday by 7 o'clock.
I hope I am talking to you. I hope you answer the damn phone too. It's all I can.
Oh, Lord.
All right. Until next time. Until next time. I'll see you.